You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Well, good morning. We have reached the second Wednesday of the month. It's time for The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. With me is my co-pilot, Jim Gilbert, all the way in from the liberal nook of Oregon's Willamette Valley.
Nice to be here, Glenn. Nice to be in person. The last time was a recorded show.
So yes.
Here we are.
We've got a full show for you today, of course, and we are wrapping up our membership drive. So we invite you once again to call, or you can't call, to go to the website, the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and click on the donate tab and think about the Dirtbag.
And, you know, there are lots of worthy causes that need money, but keeping KBOO on the air is darn important.
That's right. It ranks right up there.
Yep.
Let's see here. If you have a gardening question, we invite you to call in with 2 months' worth now of questions. 503-231-8187. We've got a full show, but we can always take time for calls, or we always do make time.
And we love to hear from listeners.
We've got a plant of the month coming up first, and then we'll be talking about soil prep, the what and the how, and I would argue, do we even need to? Still time to plant, still time to prune. Well, what am I saying? Still time to plant. Of course, it's time to plant.
That's right. Spring
but,
is here.
But almost. With bare root. We can still squeeze in some bare roots.
Yep.
And we'll have the answer to last month's garden stumper. We stumped everybody on that one, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And then interesting finding out about what the plant breeding that is going on out at the at Northwoods Nursery and Jim's spouse's, Lorraine's, perennial green beans or just beans?
Well, they can be green or
okay.
They cannot be green.
We're gonna find out about that too. A little bit of seed starting, what should we do inside and what can we do outside? And then our Dirtbag Dictionary term, hopefully we won't forget about this, seed stratification. It's a good one. And then a documentary update and update on Jim's travels if he's learned anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot, actually.
And back to what's annoying me this month, since we're into March Madness almost. We're into March, certainly. But this just reminds me, and I'll be watching plenty of basketball, probably. And this has been going on for at least 15 years, I think. But the players, both men's and women's, have, after a foul, before the foul shot, they huddle up under the basket or around the key or wherever, you know, for 5 seconds maybe. And, you know, what do they say? What can they say? When I was playing ball, granted this was some time ago, you know, what are they talking about, this hot guy in the percussion section of the band? Or a stock tip that what?
Yeah, maybe they rub something on the ball.
Well, the ref has the ball.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, It just slows the game down, and I don't see what is accomplished by it. But anyway, there's a corollary to that, too, and that's that they congratulate the free throw shooter, whether the free throw shooter makes it or misses it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a holdover from when, you know, the participation trophy for young kids.
Everybody wins, right?
Even if you lose. Yeah, that's right. Okay, on to better things. And boy, do I have a good one here, Jim. This is a quote. I subscribe to the email, Word of the Day, and he always has a quote. And this is by an author I'd never even heard of, but a young buck by our standards, Jim, born in 1990.
Mm.
Johnny Sun is his name. I did a little looking online, and he's Canadian. But this is what he said, not on his birthday, but you ever wish that fireworks were incredibly quiet and also didn't disappear so quickly, and also you could keep them in your home, and also you could hold them in your hands? Because if so, I'd love to introduce you to flowers. I got to hand it to Johnny Sun.
Yeah?
Yeah. Jonathan, short. Okay. Well, what's the tool you've used mostly in the last month, Jimbo?
Hand pruners, but also my little electric chainsaws.
Still doing that.
Yep. Yeah. I'm definitely doing it. So removing some plants that have gone past their useful time. So
pruning them at ground level.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's been the chipper shredder. Mm. I'm in the process of really hacking back a large standard size Gravenstein tree.
Mm, yes, you told me about that tree.
Yeah, and still now I'm down to, I need a bigger chainsaw to cut up the stubs that are left that are 10 feet long that are still on there. But they're, you know, they're, each branch is, or trunk of it is over a foot.
That's crazy, man.
I'm leaving one and I'm taking out three.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just way too big. But the chipper shredder, boy, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's some work to get it through. You know, I wish it had an automatic feed, so I didn't have to jam them in there. And it's time to sharpen the blades too, because what I've read in the owner's manual of this one is when it doesn't pull itself through just one branch, then it's time to sharpen it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having to feed it a little more than I'd like. But anyway, so that's probably going to change here one of these next month, that I'll be using another tool.
Well, you know, if you come up with the answer for the garden stumper, you could get those blades sharpened probably. I don't know if Ted will do that or not.
Well, if you brought them in, you know, if you took them out of the, okay, I can probably get this one. Yeah, good. Thanks, Jim. Good tip there. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll begin here today because our plant of the month is lingonberry.
Mm,
yes.
Nice.
Very common from the Scandinavia, but also in northern United States and Canada. They're native to that. Yeah, but I grow them in my place. And I've learned a few things when I was researching this plant, too, that it makes sense to what I've noticed is that you can have bright berries, you know, almost ready to harvest, and there's blooms on the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it can have up to three different bloomings. And I wonder if from genetic, or not genetically, but how it evolutionarily, to took advantage of thaws, because they grow in pretty cold places.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had a lingonberry in a much sunnier, drier spot, and they eventually died. And so now I have a better location, more shady, and easier to water to do that. It's a very low-growing bush, 6 to 12 inches or something like that. And about 20 years ago, there was some experimentation to growing them commercially in the Willamette Valley. Did you hear?
I remember that. Yeah.
I don't think there's much happening now, though.
Didn't happen. No. But you know, it is. I think it's prime. I had a neighbor who grew them commercially to some degree. But they have to compete with a lot of other berries.
Right.
And sadly, you know, the Swedes love lingonberries. I mean, that's their thing. You know, but an American's not so used to them. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, when back in the day when I was selling Swedish pancakes, you know, so that was up to 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, lingonberries were one of our best sellers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we only had four different options. And, you know, so it was one of the top four. but we would charge a buck extra for it because they were so expensive because we imported them from Sweden.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're in a sauce and whatnot. But these are small. People would ask us, well, what is a lingonberry? First of all, they wondered how to pronounce it. It's spelled L-I-N-G-N-O-N, lingon.
Mm-hmm.
And we would reply, you know, well, what is it? And it's, you know, kind of a cross between a cranberry and a huckleberry. It's tart. It's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Berry from one bush, you might be able to get a pound if you're lucky.
Yeah, a mature bush.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they mature. They could produce in the first year or two, but they're at full production by year three for sure. 6 to 12 inches tall. They spread from rhizomes under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they're evergreen. So it's a nice, you know, it can be a nice plant in the garden.
Yeah. Unusual hardy evergreen, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And we used to grow it, but have it for quite a while. But in our very occasional journeys to IKEA, they sell lingonberry syrup there, which I like to buy. And I take a little bit of syrup in a glass with some carbonated water, mineral water, and it makes a wonderful drink.
Uh-huh. You do that with other things, too.
With schizandra, magnolia vine berries, schizandra berries.
Uh-huh,
also,
uh-huh,
is really
uh-huh,
good.
Uh-huh. I just remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, I do it almost every
elixir.
Day.
Elixir. Yeah. That's why you don't look a day over 65.
Even though I'm not over even 60 yet.
Just, oops. Sorry about that.
Don't we wish.
So... yeah, okay. One other thing here, too, is that while the plant is very hardy, the blooms are only hardy to about 30 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that might be why it has the multiple blooms, so that if a first bloom doesn't work, it's got a second one that it can rely on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There at the as the glacier melts.
That's right. That's right.
Increases. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and take our first musical break. Are you ready for that one here? Yep. Okay. Well, the theme, I don't know that I've ever used this theme, but the month of March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a few songs that are exploring that, although I'm not playing the lion song first. But instead, I'm playing Buddy Guy's version. I don't think he wrote it. Of Mary Had a Little Lamb. Maybe you remember this one from your youth there. So.
Oh, of course.
This is a coordinated monthly test of the emergency alert system through broadcast stations in the greater Portland-Vancouver area, including Clackamas, Columbia, Multnomah, and Washington counties in Oregon, and Clark County in Washington. With the cooperation of public safety broadcasters and cable operators, this system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency, official information would have followed the alert tone. This test was originated by Clackamas County in Oregon. This concludes this test message.
Basket. I wrote a letter to my babe, and on my way, I
I just had to get that tasket in there. I just love that.
Yeah. I don't think my mother ever played that for me when I was a kid.
No?
No.
Not that version. Yeah. Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble also has a nice grooving version of Mary Had a Little Lamb, reminding us of what's going to happen this weekend.
That's right. It's the lamb is coming.
Boy, I guess.
Right.
What, do we have 3 or 4 days maybe in the 70s?
Well, I've heard rumors to that effect.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. I have to go look for my short sleeve shirts.
Well, I'm sure will spur lots of people to get out into the garden, probably me too, and then start turning over their soil and blah, 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 blah. And a tasket. We don't need to do that. Really, there's no physical reason that you need to turn your soil if it already has good soil structure, if it has good tilth. You know, Jim and I were joking about the, oops, what's this here? Before we got the mics on about, sell your tractor.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's just not possible to have the soil ready to go probably from, a farm that has hundreds of acres or however many dozens of acres you farm out there.
Yeah.
You just need to, for weed control for one. But in the home gardens, I have some raised bed gardens. Now, I've been in my place for 37 years. And I have some raised beds that I haven't turned the soil at all in 25.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm planting cover crops, and I'm either pulling those up or just cutting them down at ground level and letting the roots rot underground. And I just prepare, a hole, say if I'm going to be planting a tomato, transplanting in a tomato. I'll just dig the hole so I can fit the plant in. So, well, what about fertilizer, you might say? Well, that's part of cover cropping that I do. It's a legume, usually fava beans or crimson clover. But I also add compost in or on the soil in the fall and just let that stay on the soil and let the natural organisms and the rain and whatever else move the organic matter down in and the nutrients. And I usually put some organic fertilizer around the surface when I plant or even in the planting hole. But I don't need to – I'm keeping up on weeds, and I don't need to rototill I just don't need to rototill. I don't even have a rototiller anymore. That's my two bits.
Yeah.
But if you need to – then be gentle and don't start too early. That's one of the main issues. If your soil is too wet and you start out there with your spade turning over soil, you can form clods if it's a clay soil and mine was clay soil, but now it's got lots of organic matter in it. If you turn it over when it's still wet and it's clay-y, then you'll end up with clods that are just very hard to get out. So you might wait until Monday rather than starting today, because it's going to dry out a lot with sunshine and upper 60s, 70s.
Yep. Pretty remarkable, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Be ready for wear your neck brace, because it's going to be a whiplash in weather. So what kind of soil prep do you do, Jim? I mean, you're not generally planting annuals.
Yeah, Lorraine is Lorraine Gardner is her name, and,
uh-huh.
and she is the gardener of the family for the vegetables. And so we have sort of a magic process we use, which, some people probably wouldn't like it, but we make raised beds and for growing our nursery stock in. And when we make the raised bed, we put a really thin piece of plastic over it. And then so we punch holes in that plastic to put our plants in.
Mm-hmm.
And so our employees, they have raised beds that they can grow their vegetables in, which is pretty cool, and that's what we grow ours in too. And the and before, of course, we make the raised bed, we prepare this, we grow a cover crop. And usually our most recent one is a combination of triticale and vetch, common vetch. So the vetch produces the nitrogen you're talking about, and then the triticale gives just a lot of organic matter. It's pretty amazing how healthy that soil is. And I'm really, really, you know, really happy with the food we get out of it.
From a beekeeper-related question, when does the triticale bloom?
Well, it's May, as I recall. Early June, but well, probably May.
Because I understand it's a pretty good bee plant.
Really? Yeah. Well, last year we harvested some, which was amazing. The first time we'd ever done it. Our neighbor had the equipment to do it, and we harvested quite a small area. I don't think more than an acre and a half or so, and we had almost 10 tons
of seed.
Of seed from of combination of triticale and vetch. It's just shocking.
So they're mixed together.
Yeah, we sold it as a cover crop seed and for people to plant just like that. It worked great though. I could wax forever about how the soils we have here in the Willamette Valley and how important it is to save them, is which, you know, I'm a very strong proponent of, but it is pretty amazing all that you can grow on good dirt. And we don't have a lot of rock in our soil. In fact, there's none in ours at our farm.
We go down about 18 inches and then we've got the river cobble from the Missoula floods.
Yeah.
But it's that top 18 is pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clay, but clay isn't a dirty word in our lexicon.
No. That's great. Right. Good.
So, dear gardeners, having fluffy soil doesn't necessarily mean having good soil or poor space. And I'm not going to talk about soil science now, but this P-O-R-E, the poor space, the spaces between the particles in your soil. We need it. I mean, 50% of it is, of our soil should be air space, this pore space. And just by rototilling it, we'll get you that, but it's not pore space, it's just fluffy soil.
Yeah. Having a good cover crop, annual cover crop, is really important for building.
The take-home message is don't leave your soil fallow. Mm-hmm. I mean, cover it with leaves, if nothing else.
Right.
And that'll help a lot.
Yeah, the high organic matter content of the soil is what, you know, that's the difference between organic fertilizer and commercial chemical fertilizer.
Yes.
Is that you build the soil, you know, feed the soil, let the soil feed the plants.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. Yeah. Well, if you have any questions on this or on soil prep, don't hesitate to give us a call, 503-231-8187. There's still time to plant bare root trees and bushes, and of course there's a lot more potted plants coming in now too, so 'tis the season. I just transplanted in a tree yesterday, and I was disappointed it didn't rain last night. But the soil was awfully wet, but I could still plant because it was in good tilth.
And it is really definitely a nice time to plant with this warm weather. You will have fun to sing songs, dig away,
tisk it.
Right. And just a quick tip on bare root planting. I've done lots and lots and lots of bare root trees, and you make sure that if you've got like when you look at the root system, they're probably reasonably well pruned, but if you've got some really long one that's sticking out, you can prune that back. You don't need to try to make a long trench for that one little little root that's sticking out there. Watch the soil level, because where the color changes, the above the roots, there's a color change when it goes from the part that should be under the dirt to the part that should be above, and that should be the soil level of your field, your garden. Don't plant it too deep. Don't plant it too shallow.
And that would also, I suspect, go for any type of mulch that you might put around it, that you would still want to keep that back from the trunk.
Pull it back a couple of inches so that there's not wet stuff right up against the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Yeah.
And it's important, I would say, to add a mulch. you know, of wood chips or something around the what you just planted.
Yep, holds moisture, keeps the weeds down. I have seen so many examples of trees not doing well when they basically stuck in a yard with the grass growing right up to the trunk. That's too much competition for the roots.
Yeah.
And so
keep roots of the tree.
The roots of the tree.
Yeah. Okay, so don't hesitate to get out there and plant away.
Plant away, right.
Okay, Jim, you know what time it is?
It's about 11. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's right. Ty, are you ready? And this is going to be a special one. Okay, it's time for the garden stumper. Okay, well, before we talk about the answer to last month's and the new one, I do want to pass along the fact that the guy who sang that, Carl Wallinger of World Party, he passed away on Sunday. Hmm. He was a Welsh singer, or musician, 66. So that's much younger.
Hmm.
And no cause given, but he did have an aneurysm in the early 2000s, but he came back from that. But kind of an old style musician, even though he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I like his stuff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's get to the answer to last month's garden stumper, and then we'll have Jim regale you with the new one. The question from last month was, why is organic fertilizer typically not applied in the winter? And the answer is because organic fertilizer is a fertilizer, yes, but it's generally in forms that are unavailable to the plant. And so they need to be broken down by the soil microorganisms, mostly bacteria. And they are not very active when it's cold. They just kind of shut down until it warms up a bit. So save your money and apply it. I suppose you can start applying it now because the soil will be warming up considerably. But that's why. That's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if nobody got that, and so they didn't get a free sharpening at Coley Farm Store. But if they call in now with the answer to this upcoming garden stumper question, 503-231-8187, you will be entitled to a free garden tool sharpening, a hand tool. And pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, hose. Sorry, cut you off.
I'm sure the listeners are sitting at their phone with their hand on the dial, which, of course, they don't have dials anymore, but
yeah,
on the keypad, ready to answer this upcoming garden stumper.
Okay. And okay, here it is.
All right. So the genus Prunus, which I'm sure everybody is familiar with all the Prunus types plants we try to grow.
Give us some examples.
Try is a word. Cherry, almond, peach.
Okay.
Plum. All those are all Prunus. And they are arguably probably, it could be among the more difficult types of fruit trees to grow in our Pacific Northwest climate because of all the rain we get, and a lot of them suffer from bacterial canker, Pseudomonas syringae, which is a bacterial disease, and there are resistant varieties, which is what the work that we do at Northwoods have been doing for many, many years, is selecting and now breeding resistance to disease.
Stay tuned for more on that.
We'll talk more about that. A lot of these fruit trees, Prunus types, Prunus genus, suffer from disease, and we struggle with it in different ways. Peaches and nectarines suffer from a specific disease. Not Pseudomonas is one of them, but there's another very specific one that only they suffer from. And I want to know which one that is.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can hear the dials spinning right now.
Okay, so the keypad, 503-231-8187. You know, that is also, no, we don't have any more. We can't take any calls for our our membership drive.
No.
But they can still go to kboo.fm and pledge, mm-hmm. or become a member, or renew your membership, or increase your membership. Yep. It'll be worth it.
Yep. Yep. Well, keep us talking.
That's right. Okay. Well, we've made reference to two things now, Jim, that's happening out there on your farm. Please do tell.
Okay. Well, so my partner, Lorraine, who, as I said, is the gardener, both in last name and in activity.
Well, I think you're referring to vegetable gardening, because fruit tree gardening is gardening, too.
Yes, but vegetable gardening.
Okay, okay.
I guess I'm kind of like, yeah. Okay, vegetable garden. She does the vegetable garden.
Okay.
She's very into it. But she has taken on a project, an amazing project, which is breeding for more disease-resistant prunus, and in particular, right now, peaches and nectarines. So what she is doing is, and it's an interesting process, fascinating process. We happen to know a man named Joe Gafreda who works for Rutgers University in New Jersey, and he's probably one of America's only right now peach breeders, and we saw him just recently in our travels. Very nice guy, and very much into it. And so, what the goal of the breeding is with our work at Northwoods Nursery is to have fruiting plants that will grow in the garden, in a home garden, without having to be sprayed. Now, it's interesting because most, if not all, virtually all of the breeding that goes on in America with fruit is for commercial growing. And commercial growing, in most cases, people don't worry about spraying. Spray. Hey, you know, what's the big deal?
It's
just
part of it.
It's just part of the deal. So disease resistance is generally dealt with by chemical sprays rather than breeding that disease, breeding resistant varieties. But however, for homeowners, do you want to spray? Do I want to spray? No. And so we're having some success with this. And over the years, we've gotten some really cool varieties that we now market. One Green World is one of our customers and a place to get them. There's yet more to achieve.
Yes.
Tastier fruit, larger fruit. Higher degree of disease resistance.
Well, speaking of disease resistance, we have a couple of calls, and they might be answers to the garden stumper. So let's see what we've got here. Good morning.
Hey, good with morning, the dirt guys. Bag. Yeah, hey, this is Brian. Listen, I'm guessing leaf curl, but I don't know if that's right.
You are correct.
Okay.
I knew it. Brian, I could hear your dial spinning as that question came out.
Nice.
Yeah, peach leaf curl is the disease that both peaches and nectarines get, and cherries don't get it.
Okay, yeah. So Brian, after we're done talking with you, if you hang on the line and Ty, our board operator, will get your contact information so I can pass that along to Coley Farm Store, and you can bring in a hand gardening tool.
Great.
For a free sharpening.
Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Love the show.
Great.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Okay, so peach leaf curl, that's one of the things that you're probably trying to...
Yeah, I wasn't gonna say it because obviously I didn't want to give the answer away, but now that Brian has given us the answer, there we are. And that's one of that's a very important consideration in our breeding.
That's probably would that be the top consideration? Or
it's right up there. Yep, absolutely.
What would be another one?
Bacterial canker.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And there are plants that have resistance to that too. So what we do is that the process of doing this crossing with a peach flower is a perfect flower, meaning it has both male and female parts, and most peaches are self-fertile. So if you don't do anything with a peach flower, it will pollinate itself.
Does this? I've always been curious about this. Does if does it still rely on insects or wind or something, or is it just, does it just happen within that perfect flower? In a vacuum, would it still produce a fruit?
The pollen has to move from the male part of the flower to the female part. So it could happen sort of accidentally by wind or something happening.
Well, I would argue that all pollination is accidental, because even an insect is after the nectar.
Yeah, okay. How about it could happen without an insect? Or, but more likely to be an insect, but it could happen without it. So so when you're breeding, you can't take a chance on either thing happening. And so the process is you emasculate the flower before it opens.
You better just define that.
Uh-huh. You take, you're typically the breeder that has relatively long fingernails, and when the flower is still closed, but quite almost ready to open, you go around the rim of the flower and the stamens, which are on the outside of the flower, you just pull that part off, leaving the pistil in the middle, which is the female part, for pollination.
Hand pollination?
That's what we do after that, yeah.
Uh-huh. And are they in a greenhouse or?
In this particular case, they are, because we have a special greenhouse for where we're keeping our prunus so they don't get rained on for obvious reasons.
You're going to have to do a later trial outside.
But the ones that, like our friend does in New Jersey, they don't have quite the weather problems that we do. So they do, he does pretty much all of his pollinating outside.
So both peaches and nectarines.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fascinating. And you know, it's like this, it's like all these little Christmas presents that you'll get in the form of a fruit, which will then have a seed, which then you will plant the seed, and then you'll wait 3 years and see what it does.
Why do you go, I can understand that would give you more options, but what if the fruit itself is good?
Well,
you stop there, and
the fruit won't be changed by the pollination. The nature of the actual fruit itself, only the seed will be changed.
Yeah, but you don't. If it's a great peach, why don't you graft it rather than save the seed?
If it is a great peach, but that's what we're trying to create, is the great peach. We don't have it yet.
So you plant the seeds and
Hope one of them will become
become
the new greatest of all peaches.
The peachiest of peaches.
That's right. So that's
okay.
And we're also doing, and also Lorraine is taking on this challenge with cherries too, with some special very very flavorful basically pie cherry types that are unique in their excellent flavor. They're not so tart.
I'm getting the impression here that Lorraine does all the building up and you do the tearing down with your chainsaw.
That takes a few years later.
Yeah.
So after they've
you've been doing this for years, right?
Right. After they have failed in the test, then the chainsaw comes out.
Well, let's Ty's on the phone there, but I wonder if he's going to be able to get us to our next musical break. No, not yet. So what else is Lorraine doing with the beans?
Okay, so she got really excited about perennial beans. They're called runner beans, and they're beans that die back but do not die. The ground, the root system stays alive, and they come back up again the next year.
There,
in her search for this, she found a source called, I think it's called Adaptive Seeds in Sweet Home, Oregon, that sells a type of runner bean. She also found some foreign sources for these, Poland, for example. They're popular in Europe, not well known here. They can be used both in the green stage, although we haven't done that yet, the actual green bean, like eating the pod. But the shelled green bean is very tasty, and then it's also one of her main goals is the dried bean, and she showed me some of the seed that she has, and I would say they're almost as big as a 50-cent piece.
Oh my!
The dried bean, crazy big.
That'd make a meal. I mean, fewer of them would make a meal.
Yeah, yeah, and the fact that they don't have to be replanted is fascinating too.
Yeah. And is it a good bean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you haven't had green bean stage yet, but
yeah, the dried bean is great.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Ty, you can you get us ready here for our next tune here? Yeah, he can do that. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got going back to one of the first theme albums, we might say, or right up there would be Genesis with "The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway." And so I just chose any of the ones, but it's a great double album set, and I can't even explain the storyline of it. But our protagonist, Rael, goes to New York.
Okay.
We'll put him that right. But anyway, this one is called The Chamber of 32 Doors, and this is where he says, "I'd rather trust a country man than a city man." We'll find out. Oops. Nope. Got the wrong. Here we go. That's worth listening to, the whole thing. It's a double album. "My Lamb Lies Down on Broadway." I've got both the live version of that, and it would have just been remarkable to hear that in the early 70s.
Wow, yeah.
Amazing. And that just reading up, there was a New York Times article on Carl Wallinger, who passed away of World Party, and he went to the private school, the Charterhouse. And that's where Peter Gabriel went and other members of Genesis, but they didn't overlap because Peter Gabriel's somewhat older. But anyway, okay, another lamb. Mm-hmm. What have we got here now? We've got time just a little bit here to... Oh, let's talk about the Dirtbag Dictionary term, seed stratification.
Sure. Yep. Well, in most cases, our listeners probably don't have to deal much with this. But,
right.
But seed stratification essentially is the process by which a seed goes through a dormant period. And so when we... When we plant our rootstock, if we're planting cherries or pawpaws or persimmons, or when we grow all those from seed for rootstock to do our grafting on, that seed, we harvest it in the fall and we keep it in a cool, moist condition, in a cooler, 32 to 40 degrees thereabouts, for several months, typically 3 or 4 months, and then the seed will germinate. And this is a process that nature has, of course, developed over years, because if the seeds were to fall on the ground immediately start to grow in the
right.
fall,
they would get killed. Indian summer there, as we call it.
Yeah, and, I mean, in most northern climates, that would mean the death of that young plant. So the seed has to go through that dormant period before it can grow.
Okay.
And that does nature's stratification, and we do it artificially in our own controlled environment.
And we don't want to confuse that with scarification,
no.
Seed scarification, which could be another Dirtbag Dictionary term.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Okay. We'll save that one.
Right. Well, we've got a good phone call, too, that we'd like to get to. Sure. So, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning.
Yep, that's you. Good morning.
Esteban calling.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. This is just a personal question for Jim. I was reading Mother Earth News and saw a reply in there from a Jim Gilbert about somebody having all their plums disappear off their plum tree just as they were ripe. And I was wondering if this is the same Jim.
Well, that's interesting. You know, there are more than one Jim Gilbert in the world, and that particular was not Jim Gilbert was not me. But
you're not the thief.
Yeah, right. No, I didn't take that Jim Gilbert's plums, but that's it. That is interesting. I should probably meet that person if he's talking about plums.
Well, the idea was that the person had been waiting for these plums to ripen,
sure.
And just as they became ripened overnight, they all disappeared off the tree. So,
What was the Mother Earth?
Wondering.
Was it Mother Earth? Did you say, or Mother Jones? I can't. Whatever.
Yeah, Mother Earth News.
Okay.
Yeah,
what was the answer?
Yeah.
What answer did they give to that?
Jim Gilbert wrote in, that more than likely it was humans that came and took them overnight. And it just brought to mind the situation out here in the gorge with my neighbors who have Italian plum trees, and they planted them, so they're only about 8 or 10 feet tall. And she came out one day, and one of the trees was literally shaking. And she looked at it and couldn't believe her eyes, but it was shaking. And the next thing she knows, a small black bear crawled down out of the tree and had just had its fill.
Yeah.
So depending upon the location, there is another animal that could have been responsible, and that's because we're out here in the gorge and up at 800 feet and back in the woods up against National Forest, it's just prime habitat for foraging animals. So,
yeah.
Raccoons.
Anyway. Yeah, I still would suspect even the imposter Jim Gilbert's, you know, that it was a nighttime raid from raccoons or possums or even squirrels. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So
yeah, that's interesting.
Thank you guys for being there. Great show always.
Great.
Listen all the time and keep growing.
Great.
Keep it alive.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're still on the phones. Good morning. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah. Hey. First of all, thanks for all the good honey. I stop by once in a while and get some honey from you.
Oh, thank you.
And I have a Daphne that got pretty beat up with all the ice and snow and whatnot. Can I take a branch and stick that in the ground? Will that grow, or wrap it in a towel and water? Will I be able to grow a branch from,
Yeah, I think you might be able to. This isn't the ideal time because it's blooming now to propagate. You know, this would be a hard cutting or maybe a little soft cutting, but generally that would be before the blooms are on there. And just sticking it in the ground may or may not work. You might need more controlled conditions, meaning, you know, perlite or something like that, and rooting hormone. Yeah, you could try it. What I've done to propagate is to take one of the branches that's very low and then do a kind of, if you're going to be doing a slice into the to that branch and bury it, but you're not slicing through it, and make a U out of that, if you will, and bury the cut part in the ground, hold it down with the stake and a rock, and then in a while, you know, months, you could see if it's rooted, and if it has, you could cut it completely then on the parent side, so you have a new plant. But you said that, you know, maybe you already have some kind of that are branches that are already kind of low. Those would be the ones to choose from.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daphne is worth saving.
I want to revive it. Well, I appreciate the information.
You bet. You bet. Okay, Jim. Well, we just have a few minutes left, so we'll just jump right to the update of the documentary. He has another showing planned, and then maybe one or two highlights from your travels.
Sure. So the as I'm sure the listeners that have been with us before know that, about my the documentary, An Oregon Story, Saving Our Beaches, Farmland, and More, that myself and Joe Wilson, my partner and videographer, created. And we've been showing it around the valley as much as we can. And we now, there's a showing scheduled for Newburgh at the Chehalem Cultural Center on Saturday, March 23rd, coming up, and doors open at 1:30 p.m. I'll be there, so if any listeners can make it, I'd love to meet you and say a few words, and we'll show the film. And it's, of course, this is put on by Friends of Yamhill County, which is one of the groups in the valley. There's Friends of Polk County, Friends of Marion County, Friends of Linn County, Landwatch, Lane County, groups that are very passionate and strongly supporting our land use planning program, which if everybody who lives in Oregon, we all benefit from this. You know, you just don't have to drive very far to see what it feels like to go from an urban center to farmland in Oregon. And we can just go to our neighboring states and see the opposite of what it looks like the other way.
I don't think we really have time to talk too much about what the legislature did. They did cut back a little bit of what the governor proposed about cutting into the urban growth boundary. And they made it, you know, they put some pretty good restrictions on it, but
still, you know, it's still frustrating, and you know, the main thing, it wasn't necessary, and our land use program seems to be the focus of some people who want to just continue eroding the protections that we have for our farm, forest, and ranch lands. Yeah. And it's you know, we have a very special state, and sadly, farmland is nice and flat, and developers love it because they can just put those houses up lickety split, and you know, like but like my friend Jim Johnson says from ODA, he says farms are factories without walls, and the amount of food we can grow and how important that is, and how important it is to preserve that agricultural land, but for climate change too, it's you know, it's forever. And I'm one of the goals now we've produced this documentary, which is a pretty neat show. And you can go online to anoregonstory.com and see a link to it and watch it online. We're now working on a classroom version of it that's going to be 40 minutes long instead of 83 minutes, which we're hoping to be able to be shown in classrooms around Oregon for both high school and college students. So that the story is an important one, and it really has not been told before in this way. So we're very happy to do it.
Should we have one more call? Shall we try to squeeze it in there?
Sure.
Okay. Good morning.
Hello?
Yep. Good morning. You're on.
Hi, this is Lee. I have a quick question in regards to using fish fertilizer. I grow cycads as a hobby, sort of. And I read somewhere where it was recommended they like to have a gentle fertilization sort of fairly regularly. And I was just curious what your thoughts were on fish fertilizer for generally fertilizing and stuff.
Well, my thought is that it's mostly nitrogen, if I'm not mistaken. And
yeah,
so you may want to...
Pretty low.
It's pretty low on everything, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what the numbers are. If the numbers are even, more or less even, then I'd say, yeah, I've used it before. Are you talking about liquid fertilizer here?
Yeah, I just mix it with water. And
yeah.
Mostly I've been using it on houseplants and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's good because it's low. It's the numbers are low,
yeah.
So you're not going to burn your plants, so to speak, with
yeah,
it.
Gotcha.
And with the organic fertilizer, you know, burning is not an issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you. All right, Jim, you got 1 minute to tell us about your most favorite part of your trip.
Well, when I sat down in the airplane, the first leg of the journey was Portland to Chicago. I sat next to a young man. And we started chatting a bit. I started talking with him, and I told him where I was going. I said, "Well, I'm going to Uzbekistan," and that's pretty long distance. And he said, "Oh, that's interesting. I'm from Kazakhstan."
Oh,
and so. Boy, did we light up, and we got to talk Russian, and Russian's my second language, and I thirst to speak it because I don't get many opportunities here. So we talked for 3 hours about his life and my life, and pretty much all of it was in Russian. And then when I got there, I mentioned Joe Gafreda, the speech breeder. We spent a day in New Jersey. And got to visit with him. And then the next leg of the journey was 12 hours from JFK to Tashkent. That's the only country now in the world where I can go that I have friends and I can talk Russian. So,
all right, Jim, we're out of time.
Well, it was fun. Glad.